Welcome to Photo Mission Focus Discussing Photography. Hi, I'm Steve Finkel. On this episode of Focus, I'm flying solo. On this episode of Focus, I want to talk about something which is kind of, for a lot of people, might be a bit boring, but it's kind of a really important part of photography, and that's file management and filing file naming conventions. And it's sometimes that's something that I see people struggle with all the time on social media when it comes to digitally delivering photos that they've taken and getting the resolution correct and that type of stuff. I noticed with my, you know, time of doing photo competitions that sometimes people struggle when there's a nominated file size with something like, say, 3,000 pixels on the longer side. People struggle sometimes to submit images in the correct format. Typically, they may be submitting something that's too low, it's too small and doesn't display very well, so it's not going to give them a good viewing of their image when it's put up on a screen. So, but again, understanding and getting your head around resolution of files is so important. It's an important part of photography. If you're going to continue to do photography, there's going to be times, like I said, when you're going to need to share information and you're going to need better share files. So you need to really kind of, I suppose, really get your head around what all these numbers mean and how you can best manage it. We'll also talk in this episode about, obviously, the storage platforms, the different platforms where you can actually have shared storage, and there's quite a few of them out there on the market now. There's OneDrive, there's Google Drive, there's Dropbox, there's WeTransfer, all these different applications, and quite often they'll have a free component where you can actually get a certain amount of storage space free, and sometimes when you're starting out, those things can work out really well. But as you get more involved and you're doing more photography and you're sharing more, you may need to look at start using one of the paid platforms so you can actually have enough storage space to do it. I'm currently use OneDrive quite a bit because I've got a subscription to the Microsoft Office suite, which comes with quite a large amount of storage, which I find works really, really well. So it's great when I've done a shoot and I've been able to share images quickly with people by being able to put them into a folder and share that folder. So if you think of these external cloud service drives, they're pretty much like having on your computer how you have a folder, and you might, on your hard drive, you might create a folder where you put photos. Typically, that's what's happening with something like a cloud storage. It allows you to create this folder that you can direct people to, and you can control who has access to that folder and who can get those images and who basically can download them. So you can set them up in different ways. You can have them so people can open Slava and they can do whatever, or maybe you can put some restrictions on what people can do. But again, it's important to get to start investigating these things and start having an idea. Again, in one of my other roles I do with one of the big Facebook groups is that we manage different things. With each week we do a spotlight, and the spotlight is when we take a photographer and we basically show what they can do. And as a part of that is submitting some images. And again, it's a part, I know where time and time again people struggle with, they either try and email the images and they don't really, and they've had to make them the files so small that they really won't display. And again, if you're showing your work off in a spotlight situation, you really want the images to display the best possible way they can. And for all the different platforms out there, you know, if you're being featured on, say, Facebook, if you just Google what's the ideal resolution size for display to give a good display on Facebook, and you'll see there it'll talk about how many pixels needs to be on each side of the picture for it to be able to be displayed correctly and look great on that platform. Now, each of the platforms are different. So if you look at it, all the different ones like Instagram, and they all have different criteria of what file sizes they need. So basically, this information is really easy to find. So what you can do is like just jump on Google and just Google what's the ideal file size for pictures going on to, say, Instagram. So that way, then you at least know the pictures that you're uploading are going to look the best they possibly can. I mean, I can see people have uploaded a file that's, the resolution is really not good enough for the platform, and the picture comes across looking quite ordinary. And again, you don't really want to show your work in that light. So you really want to be able to get your head across what it means and that type of stuff. And like I said, It's one of those kind of, I suppose, boring subjects because it's kind of numbers and different things, and some people shy away from numbers and different things like that. So, but again, it's something that's really important. The other thing is when you're sending like images to a third party, it's really important that you come up with a naming convention on how you name those images. Sometimes I get images sent to me and they're just the native file names that the camera has given it. You know, it'd be JPEG, XYZ, ZZZ, whatever. And again, that's not the most ideal situation because the person you're sending it to, if they're storing it and they're going to use it, quite often it's much better to include much more information, even though you might put in the metadata, you might put all your details in there, but chances are the person receiving is not going to really dig into that image that deep to find out, just double checking. But if there's a really simple way of doing it, and what I typically do is if I'm shooting for a particular event, I'll put the event name in the file. So it'll be just simply say it might be Joe's event, and I'll put the date. So I'll just simply put in, you know, whatever the date is, I'll just go 03/04/24. And in file type names, you can't kind of have special characters like brackets and different things. So I just keep it whole numbers. But then I also put in there my name. So I put as a photographer. So basically it'll be the event. It'll be the date of the event and it'll be my name. And what I do is typically because, you know, I use Windows, some people use Apple, but I use Windows for my management of different things like files and stuff. So once I've completed a group of images ready to be uploaded, say to go to OneDrive to be shared to somebody, the very first thing I'll do is I'll go in and I'll select all the images once they've been kind of edited and ready to go. Then I'll, on the very first image, I'll click rename image, and then I'll rename them Joe's event, the date, my name, and then hit enter. And because you've hit Control A and you've actually marking all the images, what will happen is that will get copied across to every image. But what it'll do is the first one will have 01 and then it'll go 02, 03, 04, 05. So they all end up with slightly unique file names because you can't obviously have them all the same file name. So the number at the end obviously is the difference, but it also then tells you how many images are in that group. So you then quickly can see that you've got 70 images that you're sharing with somebody. I find this works really well because when that person downloads those images and stores them somewhere, when they go and look at those images, all the information is actually there in the file name. They don't have to go and kind of think about too much. Like, it just make it super easy. So again, coming up with your own naming convention from a very early stage is a really good thing to get into those practice of just doing things in a way that as you grow, because this is what I see quite often with photographers, people who start off and they kind of start doing a little bit of work and then they get more and more work and the work really starts rolling in. And one of the challenges is, like I said, they've never thought about too much about how to name it. And you want to be consistent. So I find that I use that naming convention just simply by using the name of the event, the date that it was the event happened, and then basically my name as a photographer. And basically, like I said, it's a really easy way of kind of, I suppose, identifying yourself as the photographer. And then it's easy too when people go, I really would like you to do more editing to image 69 or whatever, because it's really easy then to be able to, rather than saying, oh, file JA2261119. And in the early days, I mean, I used to not have a real naming convention, and that's what used to happen is that people would then want you to do something, or they'd want a copy of that, another copy sent somewhere else. And again, so to avoid confusion, this way, by having that unique naming practice, that basically made it really, really easy then to know exactly which image or which set of images that person is wanting you to do something extra with. So again, it just really eliminates, I suppose, any kind of misunderstandings because it basically just makes it very, very clear. So like I said, coming up with a naming convention and coming up with it as early as possible. So if you're just starting out in photography and you're producing images, the other thing I do is I typically have my main folders where I store my images. So I have folders where all my raw images are. I have folders where my JPEG kind of edited images are. And then images that I share for an event, I will create, because I've got multiple amounts of drives in my computer and on my NAS drive, that I'll actually create a folder in, which I've called the overarching name is Shared Images. And within Shared Images, I have a number of subfolders, which those subfolders will use the name of the event and the date of the event, and I'll typically put them in there as well, just so I've got a quick way of getting to them. So they're locally stored on my machine. Then I will then transfer that whole folder of that event up to, say, OneDrive. And then that'll sit on OneDrive as long as it needs to be there. So what I will periodically do is I'll put files up there for a period of time, and then once everyone who needs to get them has got them, I will then take them down, because just to save space, because even though I've got a reasonable amount of space, I just kind of think, well, I was just trying to be as economical as possible by, you know, not having stuff up there that's no longer really needed, that the person who it was intended for has actually had their images, got their images, and I no longer need to store them there. And the reason I put that on my local drive, I have another folder which basically with that same naming convention, and I have that group of files there. So if that person does come back to me in 6 months' time and said, oh, I've lost those images that you did for me for that event, can you send me that group of images again? It makes it really easy then to be able to go in and just upload that folder from my local drive back to say something like OneDrive, and that person then access those images again. And then once that's been done, I can then remove them. Like I said, with the shared file services where you can share files, again, there is some of them have more control over others, but a lot of them, obviously, you can just copy a link, and that link you can then just email that link to somebody rather than emailing the actual files. Because it's kind of then, it's much smaller to email a link than a whole bunch of, say, JPEG images. Then that person can actually then click on that link, and that will take them to the shared drive, and then allows them to be able to browse those images, and then also allows them to be able to then download those images onto their device so they can actually use them as intended. And again, I just find this works really well way of delivering images. I mean, over time, there was times when I'd, you know, transfer the images onto a USB stick and I'd send someone the USB, or they'd come and pick up the USB. Going back even further, I'd burn them to a CD. But these days, we were actually quite spoiled, because we've got this really, I suppose, easy way of sharing files using a cloud-based service. And again, once you get your head around how these services work and pick one that works for you, and like I said, most of them have an entry-level type free amount of storage, and it's not huge amounts, but it's enough to get you started. Like if you shot a small event, you definitely could use one of the free services to place those files. And what you'd do is, obviously, to keep that space free, is once that person's uploaded, you might just say, I'm going to leave these files here for a week. You'll need to upload them within a week, because then I'm taking them down. So you can then use that space for maybe your next client or your next person that you're actually sharing images with. And again, you know, we're not always sharing images, you know, for a commercial thing. It could be for family. So think about it. So if you've done a birthday shoot for one of your family members and you've got a whole bunch of images, you can actually then put them into a folder, share that link with the family, then all the family members can jump in and grab the images from that shoot. It's a really easy way for people to be able to access those images. And I find, like I said, it's kind of the way of the future. And like I said, as more and more people get their head around it, it will actually just make life easier. And again, those images, sometimes I'll leave images in the shared folder. So if you're actually traveling and you want to share again, or you want to show people those images without even uploading them, you can actually just open up that drive and then access those images wherever you've got internet access. So again, it can work really good as a kind of you could have your portfolio stored in a folder, that then you can just email that portfolio, that link to that folder. And you're not doing it every time by putting, you can share that link with multiple people. So again, you're not having to kind of reinvent the wheel every time you want to show off your portfolio. It's just a different way of, I suppose, distributing images. So let me go back to one of the things I started talking about at the beginning, and that's actually file size. And this is kind of really important that you start to understand that when you take your raw file into your chosen program, or you know, you may not be always working for raw file, maybe you're using JPEG images. But when you've finally done whatever you need to do the image, like whatever edits you've done and you've added your watermark and you've done everything you need to do to that image, and it's to the point now where it's a deliverable image, it's ready to be delivered to the intended person. At that point, then you've got to decide at what resolution you're going to output that. So when you save it as a JPEG, there's different options available where you can save it at different qualities. But there's also options where you can save an image, you can change the actual size of the image, so you can save it a different image. And sometimes, like I said, on some programs, like, you know, if you go to email something, you'll see sometimes that email on certain platforms will give you, do you want to send a small, medium, or actual size? And it will actually reduce the size of that image, which might not be ideal. So by you understanding and playing around with different image sizes and knowing, like I said, where it's intended and how it's going to be used is important. Obviously, if it's going to be gone into, a print situation where it's going to be printed, you really want to send it through at the highest possible resolution you possibly can so that it prints the best. And there's other formats too that people use for printing. So quite often I'm sending something off to be printed. Quite often it'll be sent off as a TIFF file, not as a JPEG file. And again, but just getting your understanding around these different files, what they mean and the different resolutions. Now, I suppose where resolution kind of starts is at the sensor of the camera. And as you people buy new cameras and they buy it because this camera was, you know, it's 24 megapixels. And how a camera gets to 24 megapixels, it's the number of pixels on each side. So we know that, you know, based on the old, if it's a full frame camera, you know, it's based on the old size of 35 mil film. So the side measurement is, you know, it's roughly 24 by millimeters by 36 millimeters is kind of the rough measurement of the sensor at a full frame. And depending on how many megapixels the sensor is, it's how many pixels are along each side. When they're multiplied together, they actually give that magic number of the actual total resolution of the sensor. So you can imagine if you've got a camera that, say, is 5,000 pixels on one side and, you know, 3,000 pixels on another side, and when you multiply them together, that will actually give you the actual sensor resolution. But when you output that photo and you bring it into, say, Lightroom or Photoshop or one of the other programs, when you go in and have a look at, you'll be able to see the actual number of pixels on each side of that image, and that gives you your kind of your starting resolution. You'll see a lot of the programs, I'll have an option to resize an image. And in resizing, which means you can resize an image, so if it was originally 5,000, on the longer side, you might be able to scale that back to 3,000. And again, understanding what this does and how it can affect the actual image. So obviously, if you had an image that was created at, say, 5,000 pixels on the longer side, and then you output it as 500, you take in a dramatic cut in quality. So when that image is actually displayed, it's not going to display as well as, say, the native image at 5,000 pixels on the longer side. And again, this is the part that sometimes people just struggle to, I suppose, understand when they're trying to move photos around. And again, like when you're moving photos around, say, on platforms, like you're trying to email photos, you know, it's okay to email one or two photos. Some of the email programs now you can do, like, say, you know, file size of 25 meg. Some will be less than that, so some won't let it go through. Some will see that the file's big and then want to add its own compression, which is usually disastrous and usually ends up with the image being not particularly usable when someone gets it at the other end. So understanding that platform, like I said, so it's fine to email typically one or two images. You can send usually at fairly reasonable resolution through on an email. But if you've got to send someone 10 images, email's not really the way to send 10 images. And I get people who do send them my emails and they'll send 10 separate emails. So you get all these. And again, it's for the person keeping track of those, you know, images. That makes it much, much harder than that having the images scattered across, say, 10 emails, where it's much cleaner and much nicer to have, say, an email where there's a link in there and that allows that person to be able to click on that link and be able to access those 10 images all in one spot. And again, it's just so much easier and cleaner. But again, like I said, it's just getting your head around understanding resolution. And like I said, one of the exercises you should do is with your photos is take your photo off your camera and put it into one of the programs, and then look around to find out where you can find the measurements of the photo so you can actually see the native resolution of what that image is. Then take the program and then output photos at diminishing numbers of resolution so you can actually see the effect of what happens when you start, say, taking a photo at 5,000 pixels on the long side and you output it at 500 pixels. So you can actually see on the screen what it's actually done to the image. And again, it's just an exercise that you've really got to get your head around as a photographer about, because these days, like back in the day of film, you took your photos, you got them processed, you got the prints, you gave the prints, and that was it. Like, it's finished. Like, it's, and if people ordered large prints, you organized the large print. So it was kind of like they didn't have to do anything. These days, like I said, if you're delivering the photos to someone and then they're going to go off and get them printed, you need to supply them at a resolution that allows them to print them to a reasonable size. And again, these are questions you can ask people. How are they going to use the images? If you're going to use them, if they're going to use the images simply on for social media, the images don't have to be super high resolution to still look okay. As soon as they start going to print media, and the larger the print, obviously, the more information you have in the image, the better they're going to print on a larger format. So again, knowing your audience and knowing exactly what people are going to do with photos on how they're going to use them, and again, that's how you're going to actually dictate what is going to be your final output size. And again, you know, for every different purpose. So if I'm supplying people images that are typically going to be used in social media, I won't always put them out at full resolution. I know that I can actually save a bit of space and pull them down, but it's knowing when to do that. Or if I know that they're going to be printed, then I'm going to typically supply them in a format that lends itself more and a size that lends itself better to printing. So like I said, there's plenty of YouTube videos about learning it. But again, I know it's, like I said, when I started at the beginning of the podcast, I said it's kind of a bit of a boring one. It's all about numbers. But those numbers are so important to actually understand, because like I said, once you've done all the hard yards and you've taken these amazing photos that you're so proud of, and then you go to share them and then they don't really share real well and they don't come across, then you've kind of put all that effort into it. And then this is kind of the final mile. It's the last bit of the equation. Like I said, once you've done all the hard yards, got the photo, once that person, and once you send it to someone, it's left you, and how they display it and how they use it is going to really, for them, it's going to say something about you as a photographer. So if it displays really poorly on a screen or it prints really poorly because it's really low resolution, they're going to say, oh, I won't use that photographer again. Look at those images. They're terrible. Not understanding that the images were probably quite good, but just maybe the method that how they've been delivered and the size they were delivered at wasn't fit for purpose. So again, it's understanding those things and getting your head around it. So again, it's worth time trying to spend a little bit of time learning about resolution, how to resize images, what the result of changing the sizes is going to do to the end product. And also, once those images get delivered, that how that person at the other end can manage and understand that your images, that they're not, because they're just going to typically throw them in a folder somewhere with a bunch of other images. And if you want your images to be easily searchable, then by putting your name at the end of the file will actually definitely make them more searchable and make that person be able to find your images much quicker. So I hope this episode's got you thinking about file management, file sizes, how you share photos, how you name photos, and that you kind of get some good practices into place from day one. And even if you've been shooting for years and you haven't really come up with a naming convention or a system, never too late to start doing it. As soon as you start kind of doing something that helps you organize your images, will just make you a better photographer and free up some of your time. Until next time, this has been Steve Finkel for Photo Mission Focus discussing photography. Enjoy your photography, and we'll talk again real soon. See ya.